Hello, this is Felicitas from podcast Erlebnis Irland. I'm your host today, and I'm sitting next to Anthony in the car on a very nice beach close to Dublin. And he is telling us something about mythical Ireland.
Hello, I'm Anthony Kelly. I'm from Dublin. I'm 49. I'm an Irish writer and a tour guide, and I have a history in Ireland of telling stories about Irish mythology and history, and I'm also a painter and an artist and in my spare time.
Lovely to have you here as an interview partner, Anthony.
An absolute pleasure to be here with you, Felicitas. And I'm so excited as well about your project coming to Ireland with the Roman costumes and reenacting what it might have been like for the Romans to come to Ireland. I immediately wanted to get involved because I love the Roman history and ancient history. So it's a great pleasure for me to be here as well.
Yeah, at the moment we're at Lough Shinny, which is close to Dublin, about 20 minutes from Dublin and in the north. And some mystery or legends rank around that region.
Yes, so we're just outside Dublin. Lough Shinny is a really famous beach and coastal area, but more famous for geology, as it has world-class geological features of sandstones and folding because of hundreds of millions of years ago when Spain moved, you know, away from Ireland. The seafloor collapsed and all the rocks were crushed. And so here in Lough Shinny, you have these amazing geological foldings. And yes, in Ireland, we have a treasure trove of history and myths and legends. And I can tell you a little bit about that.
Oh, that would be great.
So we have cycles of myths in Ireland. So one myth cycle is it's called the Book of Invasions. And that's about the migration that came into Ireland. So, for example, one whole series of legends is told in one of my most favourite stories. Is a character called Chuan Mac Cadil, and he tells the story of how people came to Ireland through his life. So his character is a magical character. He shapeshifts, he changes forms. So he lives first as a man in ancient Ireland, but his people die out of a plague. But he is the sole survivor, and he lives in Ireland alone like a wild thing. And then he sees the second wave of people come to Ireland, and they don't eat, they're vegetarians, and then he dies, but he is reborn as an animal. So he goes through shapeshifts, and he becomes a wild boar, he becomes a salmon, a fish, a bird, and he sees the different groups of people who come to Ireland by boat and by ship, people like the Firbolg, the Tuatha Dé Danann, all these, and then the Nemedians, the people of Nemed, and that's one beautiful story about this, the idea of migration to Ireland, there's no, over hundreds of thousands of years, different waves of migration, you know, came to Ireland, like as the Celtic peoples came, the Normans came, the Vikings came, again, new invasions, new migrations. So Ireland is a story, it's a history that's constantly evolving. There's no true Irish. We're a mixture of everybody who came before us and afterwards.
So like the shape-shifting animals. So it's a metaphor.
Exactly. So Irish myths and legends are all metaphor and images. Metaphor is particularly strong. So in Ireland we have, for example, in Roman and Greek mythology, you have a pantheon of gods. Mm-hmm. In the ancient Irish myths as well, you have a pantheon as well. Not as well known. For example, you have Manannan Mac Lir would have been the god of the sea, which is apt to mention him because we're beside the sea now. Another god would be Lugh, L-U-G-H, who is the god of the sun, and he symbolized the sun. So the early sun, the sun is super, would have been super important for the early like agrarian peoples of Ireland because everything was based around the harvest. Mm-hmm. And the dark deities, we have these dark kind of figures in Irish mythology called the Fomorians, and they're creatures from the sea, from the north, raiders, and they are sometimes described as monstrous beings who would, and their ancestors, the Tuatha Dé Danann, the tribes of the Earth Goddess then, who defeated the Fomorians. And so there, that's one of our, that's in the Book of Invasions, one of this battle between the gods. The earth itself, Danu, was viewed as a woman, a goddess of fertility. So then you had the rivers. The River Boyne would have been viewed as sacred. So the River Boyne flows near Newgrange, in Drogheda, one of our most fertile valleys. So again, all of the deities are to do with fertility, transition, the seasons. The ancients worshipped the stars. A lot of, we have all these ancient dolmens around and standing stones that are linked to the sun, the moon and the seasons. And we also had other gods like the Dagda. So we in Roman mythology, you would have had the Zeus, or so the that's in Greek mythology, Zeus. So the Irish equivalent of Zeus would have been the Dagda, and he was a large man, like a figure who had a bit like Thor. He had his big stick, and he was very powerful. You didn't mess with him. And there's lots of he'd give you a big whack with a stick. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of other characters and myths throughout Irish history. One of the big and most famous legends is called the Cattle Raid of Cooley, mm-hmm. or on Tyne. And that's about a mythical struggle between the west of Ireland and the east of Ireland. Sorry, the west of Ireland and the north of Ireland. And it's about Queen Maeve of Connacht, who is a mythological woman, one of the most powerful figures of female power in Ireland. So she was a very wealthy, some say sorceress and queen, and her husband was called Eilil, and they had a lot of wealth. And one day they're counting all their money and their gold and their coins and their sheep and their cows and all their slaves. And they're almost equal in wealth, except Eilil, the husband, has a huge white bull. Now, in those days, everybody's wealth was measured in cattle. And so Maeve wanted to outdo her husband, so she needed a big bull. And the only other bull on the island of Ireland was another bull called the Brown Bull of Cooley on the east coast. So Maeve sets out to get this bull. And by hook or by crook, she gets a contract to buy this bull, and is going to be approved, but the men who arranged the deal for the bull drink too much beer, and they joke and say, aha, you know, you could have got an awful lot more money if you had haggled. And as a result, the man says, no, get out of my house, you tried to cheat me, I'm not going to make the deal. So Queen Maeve is furious, and she declares war, and she goes to the east to take the bull. Mm-hmm. However, in the north of Ireland, there's a band of warriors very powerful called the Red Branch Knights. So she knows that they're the only obstacle to this, her plan. So she casts a spell poisons their food. And the knights, these very powerful warriors, are immobilized with pain for like a month. Mm-hmm. Maybe something like 40 to 60 days. However, one of them, Cú Chulainn, a very young warrior, is away with his girlfriend that night. And he doesn't get the sickness. And he sets out to fight the army by himself, to delay them long enough so that the rest of the Red Branch Knights can recover. And the Tyne is all about this war between Cú Chulainn and his army. And first of all, Cú Chulainn challenges the champions of this army to single combat on chariots with swords, and he kills them all. And then a bit like Rambo, you know, that old movie Rambo, he goes in the night and he defeats the enemies one by one, and it, like a ghost haunts this army until they're terrified. And eventually, Queen Maeve seduces his best friend and Ferdia, the second most beautiful man in Ireland. And they have a great battle. Cú Chulainn and Ferdia battle for almost a week, single-handedly. And in the end, Ferdia is killed by Cú Chulainn, and Cú Chulainn is wounded gravely. And eventually then, Queen Maeve sends her assassins that hunt Cú Chulainn down, and eventually he's killed with arrows, his chest and body pierced by arrows. He ties himself to a stone, and a bit like at the very end of the first movie of Lord of the Rings, where Boromir is on the stone and he gets pierced by arrows. That's taken directly from Irish mythology. And eventually Queen Maeve gets, Cú Chulainn dies, and everyone mourns because he was a really good looking boy. I often say that the women of Ireland mourned because Cú Chulainn died. Now, at this, when he dies, Queen Maeve gets the white bull, so she gains her victory. Mm-hmm. But it's very late, though, and the two bulls are dragged back to get to the white bull is dragged back to Galway, to Connacht, where she's based. However, another legend talks about the two bulls being the reincarnations of ancient giants who hated each other, two brothers. Mm-hmm. And when the two bulls meet, they have this titanic fight, mm-hmm. and they gore each other to death, and they smash the earth and break up the earth and cause the cliffs of Moher to fall and crash. Mm-hmm. And then, so the two bulls die, so which is a shocking waste of money in a sense. So it's a mm-hmm. great tragedy. And then Cú Chulainn's brothers, his brethren, the Red Branch Knights of Ulster, they recover from this poisoning and they make war upon the men of Connacht of the West and Queen Maeve, and there's a huge bloodbath. So it's a massive battle and everyone dies.
Aww,
and that's Antoine, the great cattle raid of Cooley. There are also other legends, like, for example, some of the more famous ones, like the Salmon of Knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's a magical fish that when you eat the fish, you gain the knowledge of the universe.
There's the one in Belfast that is...
There is a fish, there's a big sculpture of a giant fish in Belfast, yeah, the Salmon of Knowledge. And the idea is that there's a young warrior, the son of a king who's been killed. His name is Finn McCool. He's living in the forest and guarded by an old druid and a warrior woman until he becomes of age, because his father was killed by a guy called Mael McMurda, a warband leader. So eventually the monk or the druid, depending on the story, is trying to catch this fish for a long time. And he says to Finn McCool, when he catches the fish, okay, cook the fish, but don't let it burn. Whatever you do, don't let it burn, because you can't damage the fish. And the idea is that he's going to eat the fish and download the knowledge. Like, mm-hmm. through eating of the fish, he'll get this great treasure of knowledge.
It's interesting because fish oil is very famous now for health things, like for brain things. So maybe that's also a connection then.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, fish is so, like the salmon as well, it's a mythical fish. It spends part of its time, like 2 or 3 years of its life in the fresh water, travels the whole world in the sea, and then comes back to the same river. So it's kind of like a metaphor for travelers and journeys. It's a very magical story. Mm-hmm. So eventually Finn McCool is cooking this fish, but he falls asleep and he wakes up just as it's burning, and he sees a big blister of a boil on the side of the salmon, and he touches it, he bursts the blister with his finger, and then he goes, ow, oh my god, and he sucks his finger, and by accident some of the flesh is still on his finger, and he becomes the wisest man in the world. Mm-hmm. and using the knowledge of the Salmon of Knowledge, he's able to avenge his father without bloodshed. Mm-hmm. And that's the start of his story. Later on, his story arc has other elements. He becomes known as a giant, and later on we have another legend called Dermot and Grainne, about two young lovers who run away together. So Finn McCool, when he's much older, he's like 60 or 70, he's like an old man, he's wise, but he falls in love with this young girl. She's maybe 16, 17, and he wants to marry her, and she agrees because she's young and, you know, her father gets money and her family gets money, but she's not really, you know, in love. And anyway, her bodyguard is a guy called Dermot. And anyway, they fall in love. And what do young lovers do? They elope. Mm. And they run away together because they're in love. And, you know, at the end of the day, Grainne doesn't want to hang out with this old guy who's like, you know, almost 80. Mm. So, but Finn McCool is so angry. He feels betrayed by Dermot. And he feels like his honour has been besmirched. He's also the king of Ireland at this stage, the High King. And he has to do something, because otherwise everyone will laugh at him. So he sets out to pursue Dermot and Grainne, and the legend follows that he pursues them all across Ireland, through the whole country for weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. Now, all across Ireland, we have dolmens, standing stones on ancient burial sites, and usually they're kind of like there's a capstone and 2 or 3 standing, like, you know, stones keeping them up like a house. It looks a bit like pie, the symbol for pie. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes people say that Dermot and Grainne slept under those stones. So they slept in caves. So there's particular caves around Ireland and stones where it's said they slept. Now, eventually, they catch them. And there's a bit of a fight. And the ending is quite sad, actually. So Dermot is dying. He's been pierced by a blade. And but they're in this kind of magical field. And there's a holy well nearby. And the story goes that if one of the characters takes his helmet and fills his helmet with this magical water, it will heal Dermot and bring him back to life. And but Finn McCool has three opportunities to do this, and he doesn't do it. He spills the water and Jimmer dies. And so it's tragedy. Mm. So in the end, Finn goes from being this, you know, in the beginning with the Salmon of Knowledge, he goes to be from being this, you know, young hero, a bit like a young Luke Skywalker or something in the Jedi, to becoming like almost like a twisted old man where he's the villain. So a lot of Irish mythology has these, it's very metaphorical. It's kind of insightful kind of characters where they go through these transitions. It's not always really clear what it's about, but sometimes the women are seen to be the victors or villains. Mm-hmm. For example, in another story, there's a famous story. You guys are going to the Berra Peninsula. One of our most famous stories is the Children of Lear. Mm-hmm. Again, an old king meets a young girl who mm-hmm. turns out to be an evil sorceress, and she casts a spell which transforms the four children of the king into swans, mm-hmm. and they're cursed to spend like hundreds of years travelling across the four seas of Ireland, the Celtic Sea, the Irish Sea, the Atlantic and the sea in the north, until finally they become human again and they die of old age, and they die, and they were buried in the Berra Peninsula in the south of Ireland. So that's another beautiful story. One of my favourite stories is of Tirn an Og and the land of the young. And the idea is that on this island, a bit like Atlantis, you have this island off the coast of Ireland where there's various islands. But Tir nan Og is the land of the young. Og is young in the Gaelic language. So Tir nan Og is the land of the young. So on that island, no one ever ages and no one ever dies. And so anyway, Oisin is a young bard, a minstrel. He has a horse and he's out hunting, and he meets this beautiful girl who's very sad, and she's almost like she's been thrown out. You know, imagine you're, for the listeners out there, imagine you're a young girl and you have a fight with your family, you have a boyfriend or something, and your dad throws you out, mm-hmm. and you have to leave the house. And she's like that. She's living in Ireland. She has to leave this magical island, and she's on Ireland. She's like depressed. She's crying. Mm-hmm. And Oisin, like a young fella, meets her and consoles her. And they sing to each other, and they fall in love, and they spend a few weeks together in the forest.
Damsel in distress.
Damsel in distress, yeah, yeah. And then eventually she tells him the story that her father threw her out of the island because he dreamed that her husband would replace him and kill him. And that's why he got rid of her, because of this dream. And Oisin says, I can't believe it. Like, your father threw you out just because of this dream. So he says, well, let's go back and let's... You know, we'll marry because I love you, but you're so beautiful, and she loves him, and we won't replace him. I'll just work for him. So they go back, and it works out. The mm-hmm. the king is like, oh my God, you're not the guy I saw in the dream. You're not going to kill me. And he goes, so Oisin ends up getting a job, marries a daughter, everything's really happy, mm-hmm. and everything's beautiful. They have a wonderful life together. They have, and however, after a certain amount of time, Niamh, the girl, gets pregnant. And Oisin's like, oh my God, I'm going to have a baby. And you know, men at this point are like, what am I going to tell my mum? Mm-hmm. You know, because Irish men are very much, they're very drawn to their mother. They're very close families. Like, if an Irish mother doesn't like her, the new girl, mm-hmm. she's in trouble, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and he also has friends. He hasn't had a stag night. He wants to go back and have a few drinks. So he says to the girl, listen, I've got a bit homesick. I want to go home to Ireland just for a bit to tell my mum about the new baby. So, she lends him her magic horse, and he flies back across, because the fly is like a Pegasus, it can mm-hmm. fly across the sea. So he comes back to Ireland, but she says to him, whatever you do, Oisin, you can come back to Ireland, but you can't just stay on the horse, don't get off the horse. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, yeah, no problem. He thinks it's a joke. So anyway, when he comes back to Ireland, he can't recognise the country. Everything's like different. You know, now that the Christian church has arrived, mm-hmm. he finds after a while where something that looks like where he used to live, but the houses are all overgrown. And the people are very weak, and they're not the warriors they once were. And he sees some old men building a kind of, it's like a bridge or something. But mm-hmm. so he reaches down and picks up a brick, like a stone for them. And the saddle breaks, and he falls on the ground, and he touches the earth, and he feels a bit weird. And he fixes the bridge for them, and they thank him. And then he notices his fingernails getting longer, and his hair is going white.
Oh, okay.
So he ages a whole day. Sorry, he ages 100 years or 200 years in a single day, and he becomes a wizened old man, and eventually he dies. But the way I usually tell the story is that he writes a letter to his love, and he puts it in the saddlebag of the horse, and the horse flies back to Tir nan Og. And then Niamh realises that her husband's not coming back. And it's a metaphor again, because the idea is that in the land of the young, time doesn't pass us. So when he comes mm-hmm. back home, he's kind of reunited with time. So it's almost like the land of the fairies is like an alternate universe where time, like a slightly different dimension where time doesn't run the same way. So maybe one day there is like 100 years here. And so when he comes back, he ages and dies.
It's like that. If you're young, you don't think about that you could age. So it, if you're young, you feel like it lasts forever.
Yes, exactly. And it's also like a lot of Irish people, when they travel abroad, like to America or to Japan or Australia, they miss Ireland and they want to come back home. And it's kind of a metaphor for that, I think, as well, that this just the how time passes and travels. And so there's a few stories there I've told you about Irish mythology. And there's many others that are with magical creatures, magical fish, magical beasts, wizards. One of my favourites is a comic tale about a giant who has three hands and one leg, and he runs around very fast by hopping from arm to arm and leg to leg, and he makes swords. He's a sword master, so he makes the King of Ireland and the knights of the Irish knights, the kind of the Red Branch knights and the knights of the King of Tara, these magical swords, and he's rich because he has these cows, and these special cows have their feet on backwards. So if you're following the tracks of the cows, you won't know which direction they went because their feet are on backwards. But the most magical thing about these cows is that they have unlimited milk. So the more milk you have, the more riches you have. And then eventually he's super wealthy until somebody steals his cows. And for me, it's a quite unusual story, but I thought it was quite funny and quite comedic. And also this three-handed man who makes swords, I thought it was quite beautiful. So some of the swords are, sorry, some of the stories are quite magical. Some of them are comical. Usually they have quite dark endings. Like Cú Chulainn dies, Diarmaid an Gráinne, Diarmaid dies. But there's and usually a lot of fighting and bloodshed. One of the great stories is about the battle between the forces of light, which is the tribes of the goddess, of the earth goddess Danu, the Tuatha De Danann, and the Fomor. And the big bad guy of the Fomor is Balor of the Evil Eye. And he's like this dark god who has one huge eye, like a giant. And when he opens the eye, he kills everything that he sees. Ew. So it's a bit like a death, right? It's a bit like...
Not a nice neighbour.
No, no. Well, as long as you don't get him angry. You know, if he likes you, you're fine. You can have drinks with him. Because the hero of this story is called Nuada of the Silver Arm. And he's like a warrior boy, the son of Lug. He's the son of the sun god. And he's lost an arm, but they replace one arm with silver. So he has a silver arm. And he ends up getting together with the daughter of Balor. So they fall in love, but he actually ends up using a sling. It's a bit like David and Goliath. Using a sling, he spins the stone and he strikes Balor in the eye with the stone and kills him. So, and then and the daughter get married and win the great battle. And it's a very cool story because of this grotesque monster, monstrous Balor and his army. And to win this battle, they have magical treasures. For example, the Tuatha De Danann have a cauldron, a huge metal cauldron. So if you think about the Hallstatt cauldron from the Celtic Hallstatt cauldron, this huge cauldron.
A very huge thing.
When the soldiers die, they put the bodies of the dead into the cauldron and they come back to life. And so that way they have kind of unlimited soldiers. And then one of the weapons as well that is used by Cú Chulainn later on in the story of the Cattle Raid of Cooley is what's called the Gay Bolga, which is a kind of type of spear, a barbed spear, that when it's like a long spear with many points on it, or like a fish spine. So when it pierces you, you die because the wound cannot be closed.
Okay.
Or some people say that it goes inside you and then spikes pop out from the inside. Mm-hmm. So using these magical weapons, the ancient Celts defeated the Fomor. And then the Red Branch Knights, of course, of Ulster were like special forces. They had special skills. They could they could jump really high in the air. It was called a salmon leap. That meant jumping on top of your enemy's shield. That's like a 5 foot high jump. And then when you're on top of your enemy's shield, you could stab down and kill him. They could run through the forest without breaking a single branch.
Oh, that's cool.
So
super skills.
Yeah. So when I was a young boy with my Irish friends, we would run through the forest, trying to run through the forest, like emulating the ancient heroes without breaking a single branch.
Would be nice for some tourists too.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to keep ourselves. We all, you know, when I was young, you know, we'd practice, you know, hiding in the forest in case the English came back. You know.
For sure, it's one part of everyday history, isn't it?
Yeah.
It talks.
Well, that's a little bit about Irish mythology. There's so many different characters, and you can go so much more in depth. And a lot of them locations, like a lot of locations feature in the stories. Like in Northern Ireland, the Giant's Causeway would be very much associated with Finn McCool. Mm-hmm. But also the Finn McCool of the North is a giant, mm-hmm. whereas the Finn McCool of the South is, you know, is a boy. Mm-hmm. And but also like so, and then you have the historical elements, for example, like the River Shannon, that was, it's all often associated with the Salmon of Knowledge, and the Shannon is the biggest river in Ireland. And of course, with all the, so many people from Germany might be familiar with salmon fishing in Ireland. And then of course you have the different, different stories like Tara as well, and the High Kings of Tara. And then Brian Boru, the ancient High King of Ireland who defeated the Vikings in 1014. He's more of a historical figure, but he would be associated with County Clare, where he was from, and his seat of power at the River Shannon as well. So many of the stories which are real are bound to his physical sites, and also many of the mythological stories are bound to landscape as well. And I don't, and also people say that the physical locations mentioned in some of the stories are also ways that poets and kings would have marked their territories. So, for example, if I was an ancient Celtic ruler, I would have had a poet, or what we call a Shanachie, who would have played the harp and told stories to my court. And the stories I told would define the world we live in and the property we own and our descendants. So a lot of it was oral storytelling. And so when Christianity came to Ireland, whatever books we had made of bark and twigs and stones were kind of burnt. So most of the knowledge we do have from the ancient times was preserved later by the early Christians who made manuscripts and documents. And you can see, for example, the Book of Invasions, which records some of these ancient stories in the Book of Kells, the long room at Trinity College where the Book of Kells is kept at the moment.
Sounds really, really interesting. Thank you very much. So if someone comes to Dublin and wants to have a tour with you, how can they contact you?
Yeah, please do. You're welcome to come to Ireland. I have a website, anthonykellywriter.com, and I can leave my details with you guys as well. And I'm happy to do walking tours in Ireland with a mythological bent and a historical bent. And I also do guided tours around Ireland, you know, private tours. And I'd be very happy. So, and also my... I can give you my email as well, anthonykellywriter@icloud.com.
What are you writing about? What are your book titles?
Well, at the moment, I have three books. They're mostly comic books because I do the art as well. So I've done three comic books. One is based about a samurai in Japan. One is a sci-fi story about a girl who goes to space and she's on an ice planet for a month. And another one is a comedy about a zombie, an Irish zombie, who lives in the countryside. I also write a lot of ghost stories. I won a ghost story prize during COVID. I'm writing some scripts for TV and films. And I also write, you know, just comedy stories and short stories. And I have some larger stories I'm hoping to publish. And hopefully a book coming out soon when I finish it.
How did the process of writing change with the help of KI, like artificial intelligence?
It's very interesting. I don't use artificial intelligence for writing at all myself. I mostly am found writing with a pencil or a pen. If I'm on the bus or in a coffee shop, I'll write on that way. And sometimes I'll talk into my phone for transcription. I think that's quite useful. Like, so if I'm touring or traveling, I might write a lot by pencil or a pen, and then later on I'll go back home and I'll talk into my phone. I think that's very useful. Otherwise, I'll be typing on my old PC. I think it's really important to what you're writing as a writer to learn as you go by writing and editing. So I think for a writer who is trying to express their feelings and their heart and their life story, the artificial intelligence won't help you at all. Mm-hmm. I think if you can't use your hands or your feet or you're disabled, I think it's an interesting tool. For artists as well, I think the same applies. I think it's interesting for an experiment. Mm-hmm. But I think if you really, really have to, for you as a person, for us, you know, because even like I'm a writer. I've been published a few, you know, here and there. I don't have any huge books published at the moment, mm-hmm. but I'm still a writer. And many people around the world are writers, even if they haven't published a book. And the power of a writer is that you have a pencil or a pen in your hand and you're recording your emotions and your feelings on a daily basis, mm-hmm. a weekly basis, a monthly basis. It's like a climate change scientist recording the tides every day of the year.
And it's also part of personal growth, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that's what makes a writer. And like the stories we've been talking about have been passed from generation to generation orally, and that's what makes them stories. So I encourage everyone, if you are into writing, to have a pen and pencil and a little diary and talk to people, meet your neighbors, say hi, find out about their baby or about their son or about the communion. Listen to the neighbor who is 100 years old, you know, complaining about how things used mm-hmm. to be, find their funny stories, because that's what it's all about. It's about connecting like the ancient kings with their bards. Because, you know, everybody, you know, who's listening today, for all you know, you could be a king or a queen reincarnated from the ancient times mm-hmm. and we're all connected. And writing is part of a way we can connect with our ancestral memory, our deep genetic memories and the myths and legends, and there's no way an artificial intelligence can do that.
That's true, absolutely. Yeah, I'm also looking forward. We're going to meet a person that is part of the Oral History Society in ECHO, and they also collect stories. Maybe that is also interesting for you.
So. Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, it sounds super exciting, and ECHO Island is really beautiful, and a lot of ocean there as well to see. Wow, you're on an amazing journey, and I'm so happy for you that you're taking part in this adventure.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure. So, go rub my hugs.
It was lovely interviewing you. Thank you very much for your time and help.
Oh, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day, and Dankeschön, and greetings to everyone in Germany, and much love from Ireland, from everybody here.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye.